You and becoming my home, you know, I know you and you know me, and but being how we don't actually know each other, my name is Nella White, N-E-L-L-A-W-H-I-T-E. When I was teaching Sunday school class about 5 years ago, I guess it was, I had some girls in my group, and, you know, college girls always change, you know, and I go to a church that's about 30 miles from me. And the girls who came there came from campuses, who came to come to that church, come from campuses as far as 45 miles, an hour, hour and a half away. You know, and we send a bus up to get them, bring them in, and take them back home, go get them for Sunday night, and take them back home, and, you know, that kind of stuff. So I always have a new business and stuff, and I always spell my name, so not everybody has a name, or knows how to, you know, pick up on that. And so the girls started teasing me, who were there all the time. So they knew when I say my name, I'd say, my name is Nella, N-E-L-L-A. And so they started doing it with me. So I almost expected some of you to start doing that right then. I am the secretary at the BSU at the University of Oklahoma. And I have a friend and I who have worked on this seminar together, this little workshop, and we want to be able to meet your needs. And we'll be talking about that. In the meantime, my friend and cohort is
Priscilla Staff. I did that well. I have a chapter verse on that, but I don't. And I'm the wife of the BSU director at Washburn University in Topeka, Kansas.
Great. We have some scriptural principles, and we have some practical stuff. And as we worked on it, we both did some of the same things. And we're going to have a big interchange up here between us, you know, supporting each other. But we also want your suggestions, your questions. It seems as if a lot of us are going through some of the same kinds of things. We get into situations and we're not quite sure what to do with them. We're not sure what really is the gracious thing to do or what's the right thing to do or what's just natural. And we want to be able to respond to you, and although we may not know all the answers to the questions that you would ask, somebody here probably has some similar experience or whatever. And so the workshop will be yours, basically. We just want to set the foundation right now with some principles from God's Word on why we even have hospitality. What is it? What do we do? Why did God even command us to be hospitable? And Priscilla?
Okay. Would somebody turn their Bibles in? Turn to Psalm 23. Would somebody read verses 5 and 6 for me? Okay, go ahead.
Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.
In Psalm 23, verses 5 and 6, this is an example of God as our host. And I've just taken some principles out of this passage and want to share them with you. This is a scriptural basis for an example of someone who's really hospitable, our Father. So, first of all, let's look at verse 5. And somebody read the first phrase for me.
Marty, God has prepared a table before me.
Right. God prepares the table before us. God is prepared. And so that's a principle that we need to do as well where we live. We need to be prepared for other people to meet their needs. And I think next it talks about how his enemies are about him, so he's not without adversaries, but yet he's safe and secure. And one thing, my husband's taking Hebrew class, so I found out that it was a custom in that day that the host was responsible for the safety and the secureness of his guests. And I was just trying to apply that, you know, to hospitality in our, you know, in our homes, and I thought, well, there's just thousands of ways that we can make somebody feel secure when they're sitting around our table or when they're in our rooms or with us. There's, you know, a lot of ways that we can make them feel safe emotionally, spiritually, physically. Mm-hmm. And so that's another principle that would be important. Then he anoints our heads with oil. And it's the custom of the time to anoint your head with oil was a thing of honor. And the thicker the oil, the more honoring it was. And that means, in the Hebrew, to really pile it on. So, again, to think of ways that we can honor the people that we have around us and in our lives. And the entertainment there signifies that it's something royal. And I know a lot of times we don't have all the things that we think we need to have a royal time, but we can do it with what we have. Then my cup overflows, and that means really there that it soaks up, it saturates. So God provides, you know, the excellent quality and the ample quantity that we need. And goodness and kindness pursue me and follow me all the days of my life. And there are attendants. Goodness and kindness can be our attendants at our table. And it's a guess that all the days of his life he's at God's table. So it's not something that that you go away from and you're always there. And so it can be even with the people that God brings in our lives. You know, you can make them feel like they have that permanent place in your heart and in your life. Also, I found out that hospitality in the Greek means that it's a love for strangers. We don't even have to be so good friends for hospitality, too. It's compared in Hebrews 13:2 with entertaining angels. I think that a lot of times we're more blessed when we're hospitable to people than the people are that we serve. So I think, too, that we need to pursue it. It's not something that just happens. Nella?
I failed to write on your papers, so you have a permanent copy, some verses from God's Word that particularly regard hospitality or who you're to entertain or how you're to entertain them. And I'd like for you to make sure that you just get these down and ponder them in your own particular situation. And we'll read them together. And the first one is Leviticus 19, verses 33 and 34. And if you would, I like volunteers. That I'm not much of a teacher, so I have to depend on other people to just jump in. And I would appreciate your doing that. If you'll, somebody will find that and read those two verses, Leviticus 19, 33 and 34.
When a stranger resides with you in your land, you shall not do him wrong. The stranger who resides with you shall be to you as the native among you, and you shall love him as yourself. For you were aliens in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God.
And somebody read chapter 24, verse 22. Leviticus 24:22.
There shall be one standard for you. It shall be for the stranger as well as the native, for I am the Lord your God.
And what's the principle? What's the standard? How do you treat guests?
Like your own. Like people you love. And not like your own. Being like people you love.
Okay, great. But there should be no major division that, you know, anybody. I mean, whether they're passing by you in the hallway, if they come into your home, if they come to your desk at the job, wherever, that guests, people, visitors are to be as if they were part of your family. Okay, and then turn to 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 9 through 11. 1 Peter 4, verses 9 through 11. Can someone read those far?
Be hospitable to one another without complaint. As each one has received a special gift, employing it in serving one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. Whoever speaks, let him speak as it were the utterances of God. Whoever serves, let him do so as by the strength which God supplies. So that in all things God may be glorified through Jesus Christ, to whom belongs the glory and the dominion forever and ever. Amen.
How are we to serve?
As unto Christ.
And that everyone has a portion to give. Now, hospitality is more natural sometimes than it is to others, but all of us have to work at developing and acquiring it. And then the last verse in particular is 3 John verses 5 through 8. 3 John 5, 6, 7, and 8, all three, four verses. Not John 3, but 3 John.
Beloved, you are acting faithfully in whatever you accomplish for the brethren, and especially when they are strangers. And they bear witness to your love before the church, and you will do well to send them on their way in a manner worthy of God. For they went out for the sake of the men, accepting nothing from the Gentiles. Therefore, we ought to support such men, that we may be fellow workers with the truth.
So what's our part in hospitality? What part does it contribute, according to verse 8 there? The question wasn't clear. Why practice hospitality? Does it have any value, according to verse 8?
We may be fellow workers.
Okay, we may be fellow workers to the truth. And the truth is Jesus Christ, right? We get to share in spreading the gospel by being hospitable. Mm-hmm. And that's our whole purpose. And Christians, you know, we just think ought to have that all natural and stuff. But don't you find that things don't fall naturally for us? They have to be worked on and developed because we are born in sin. We don't know how to be good. We don't know how to tie our shoes. We don't know how to hold a fork correctly. We don't know how to treat people. We have to learn those things. And the bad, the evil, the not good is just part of us. And we have to learn how to do the right, the good things. So, the blue sheets are a part of some things that I thought about. A girl fixed out a questionnaire for me for this particular workshop because I thought I didn't know what was going on when it came to hospitality. And she gave it to people who had been in my apartment and who had seen me at the office and who had watched me at BSU functions. I love to cook, and I enjoy putting all this kind of stuff together, you know. And so for 2 weekends, with a weekend apart, we've had major conferences at BSU, and I was responsible for the food, so I thought this is a good opportunity for them to watch me and give me feedback on what I do and stuff, about how I help people feel at ease, you know. She designed this questionnaire, and it was phenomenal to me, the things that people brought out. And so as I started thinking about it and taking their comments and thinking of other things for myself, I came up with these 11 pages. Then after I got it run off, I thought of a whole bunch more things. And I have all kinds of little homemaking hints in my head and a few that are written down here that I'd just love to share with you. But we can't talk fast enough. Now that we have enough time. And what I'd like to hear from you is, first of all, the thought provoker on the first page there about entertaining and hospitality. Do you agree or disagree with that statement?
Yes, unfortunately.
And why do you say that,
please? Probably because the people that I know are hospitable I've been impressed with it because I've come into their home unawares and they have it planned for me. And just right like that, you feel accepted and welcome. And it's the people who have planned and you know they've really done. I mean, if somebody plans something, it doesn't mean you're necessarily going to feel real comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an attitude of living.
Okay, the attitude is the thing we're after, isn't it? This is a planned time. And with real honesty and real truthfulness, have you experienced any hospitality in the past 15 minutes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So planned situations don't necessarily have to be just entertainment without hospitality, right? The book, Open Heart, Open Home, has the second chapter dealing with that particular thing. And I'd suggest that you read it just for getting a perspective on entertaining and hospitality, being hospitable. The whole book, I think, is one of the most encouraging books I have read. It's easy to read, and it's easy to follow. You may not agree with Ms. Main's manners of housekeeping, the way she runs her household. I mean, you may be a very precise person. In this, she describes how people are always rolling through her house. Her husband's a pastor. And you may not like all of that, but the principles here are very, very good. And I think that you would profit from reading this book, and especially if you're really interested in helping make disciples. There are two chapters in here which really turned me on. When I usually, people have to draw pictures for me and tell me this is what it is. I'm not very good at abstract stuff, but I found two chapters in here, and the first one was on salvation, how to share the gospel through your home, and what the experience of salvation that comes through in the way you express hospitality. And then the next chapter works on discipleship and how to follow up using hospitality. And I got really excited. They were just, what do you call them, parallels, or when something's kind of like that it's described, you know, whatever. And then another book that I have as an illustration is Edith Schaefer's book on hidden art. The reason I suggest this is because it tells how to use creativity, how to develop your creativity. Instead of just leaving a plain old note written with pencil on a piece of white paper, why not find something else with either another color of ink on that same white paper, or find another color of paper and use the pencil, draw a flower on it. One of the things that I do that in just signing my name, I sign with a heart, and it's like it's got a string down, you know, and then a heart on the end and three little dots after it, and then I sign my name or my initials. And, you know, something like that just kind of, it says love without writing out the word love. Or it says, you know, I'm want to give to you in some way. And so that's one of the things, and that's the reason I suggest this hidden art, is to help give you thoughts about how to use the God-given creativity that you do have in your own being, because you are created in the image of God, and He does live in a Christian. Therefore, you are created, and you may not have developed it, and all of us have to develop it, you know, and work on it. Mine's all been learned, because I grew up in a home where we didn't do any entertaining, none, and my mother never even, you know, got to go frequently with me to, when I was in band, go to any of the band concerts and stuff. You know, she had to stay home and take care of the other kids, and we didn't have a car. And, my parents are divorced, and been since I was a little kid. And, you know, so we were struggling, you know, and poor and that kind of stuff. And so what I have learned in just recent years. I live in a tiny little three-room, what's called a shotgun house. It's an oil field house brought in and set down on the ground, you know. And so you could see the ground through the boards, and the windows didn't lock, and they were rotting, and different color wallpaper on all the walls and the three rooms, and the linoleum was, you know, pretty atrocious and that kind of stuff, and mismatched colors and non-comfortable furniture, and I just cannot tell you how depressing and how sad it was. And yet I lived in that for over 4 years because I couldn't afford to live anywhere else. And as God brought, used that time to teach me about colors and to do something. And I spent good money on good things, and I would suggest that you do that. Don't just do something to kind of fill a place, but select something with a care with what it does for you. Women are feeling beings. When we walk into a situation, we feel about it. When we're talking with somebody, we feel about it. And a room makes us feel, and we express our feelings in a room. And so I One day I thought, I cannot afford to spend this price on these little plastic flowers. So I thought, they just please me. I like them. They cut pastel pink truffles, or, you know, kind of like a honeysuckle thing, you know. And I bought some little white ceramic pictures, P-I-T-C-H-E-R-S, to put up on the in the bathroom, you know, and they face each other, and those little pink flowers, every time I saw them, just made me happy. I just smiled every time I saw them, you know. And so I still have them up in the apartment I have now, around one on either side of a big old round, flat TGNY mirror, you know. You know, and it just makes me smile. It makes me feel happy. And so it's been a good investment because now I've had them for nearly 10 years. And so, you know, I've got my money back, I'm sure, out of it. Before we go too far, I asked some people from the workshop before what would be the best way to do this. And they felt like that the time that we invested in the questions from the group in the workshop was really profitable. And so I'd like to give you an opportunity to ask questions and see if we can help, you know, in the situation where you are. All this blue sheet does is just give you a springboard. There's some of the things that I have done that I enjoy doing. And if you have one of the suggestions that came up in the earlier workshop is that many times when you have an overnight guest or something, is that, or maybe have two or three or a house full, you know, and like you have a seminar someplace and they come stay with you and they forget their toothbrush, you know. And you can find toothbrushes on sale, you know, for a dollar or whatever sometimes, and just buy a dollar's worth of new toothbrushes to keep on hand in case the guest forgets. And I had that experience in that I was the one who forgot my toothbrush. And, two times. One was an accidental time. My car went kaplooey and I stayed with the friends. And I was on my way home and wasn't prepared to stay out overnight, so I had to use the gowns and the everything, you know. And so they gave me a toothbrush. Well, it wasn't 2 weeks later that I went to eat Sunday dinner with some friends and went back after church or something. But anyway, ended up spending the night there instead of going back home. And I wasn't prepared with gowns or anything then, and a severe worn man's robe just then I had to have a toothbrush again. So now what I do is I took that second toothbrush, wrapped it in saran wrap, and I keep it in my purse all the time, you know, so I don't get caught anymore. I've received two new toothbrushes because I wasn't prepared. Okay, do you have a question? No, not about one. Yes.
I just got something I want to share. I think it really ties in with this, and I'm really glad I came in here. The company that I'm associated with is Home Interiors in DF, and it is a Christian company out in Texas. And our purpose of Home Interiors is to make everybody feel like somebody. And this is really going to help me. I can't wait till I get home to the next sales meeting. I'm really going to lay into it and take all this with me.
Oh, bless your heart. Thank you. Do you have a question?
How about the balance between spending too much time trying to fill in and getting yourself set to have people? It's like sometimes it seems like with me, I can get so much activity going that by the time so many people have come in so much, I'm just really strung out and I know how. I'm not as suitable because like my own needs haven't been met. Like how can you kind of begin to find that balance?
Is your spiritual gift serving?
It sure is. I assure you.
See, one who has that particular motivation does that a lot, and that's the only reason I am.
I was raised that way. My mother, I thought,
yeah, I thought that too. I ended up having it, you know, and I thought, Lord, everybody knew this before me, you know. But I do the same thing, and because I enjoy having people in, I like to share and. I think through people that I want to have, and I have a list in a little book I carry in my purse of people I want to have over. And so if they come, then I mark them off. And one of the things I've been thinking about doing is I should keep a list of what I serve for those guests. You know, if I make that happen a second time. And so the other day, lo and behold, I had these guys and girls over, you know, for dinner, and the guys were remembering what we had the first time, you know, and I said, boy, you have just confirmed what I've been thinking. I need to keep a list. And so Lord, I hadn't duplicated in this particular situation, but I had thought about it. And so I think that would be a real good thing. It takes a little time, you know, to remember what your menu was and write it down and who ate it. But I think through it. I think through who needs to be with somebody else or who needs to get to know somebody else. I had some single fellows and girls over one night just because there were qualities in each one that I felt the others needed to know and be around. And we had some new people, and they needed to get to know some of the old homestead people. And then I had two couples over Tuesday night. Both of them, one couple was married in September and one was married in October. And they're real good friends. And they hadn't been able to get together. And they both could happen to come to my house at the same time. And I was not much a part of the conversation at all because those two couples just laughed and hooped and hollered and remembered and enjoyed. And, you know, it was just fun to sit there and watch them enjoy it. And the next day one of the guys came by and he said, I just want to tell you again how much I enjoyed last night, because he said, every time I'm around, you know, this other couple, I just see how much more real they are now. And they've both been kind of standoffish, but, you know, I understand marriage makes you blossom, and so they were.
With our church group, and I was wondering, I do a lot of, I organize and so forth before I do anything, and then I do it, but then I still end up in the kitchen with a lot of, doing a lot, but our group of kids have been very good about coming in and talking to me while I'm working away, and my husband seems to be able to circulate nicely and everything, but I don't know, sometimes it leaves you with time if you see him, because you're still been in there working away.
Martha, Martha.
I thought of that, but yet I enjoy it, and it wouldn't go off well if it wasn't, you know, because they're working around, but I have been trying to do something about that myself and get away and try and plan to. But it still is hard to do.
Right. A suggestion, just for the sake of the tape and those who want to hear this workshop, the question is that what do you do when people don't volunteer to help and you prepare ahead of time and you're still stuck in the kitchen while everybody else is off over here speculating? Do you have a comment or a thought?
I was going to say, you know, sometimes we have the young people in the house, they're just, well, what can we do to work in this way?
There's a balance, and all of us need to learn, you know, the thing. And I would suggest to your question that maybe that you invite one or two girls to come over and help you prepare for that occasion that's coming up. And just, you know, and use the time for getting to know them, letting them get to know you, to learn. See, the Titus 2, verses 3 through 5 says that the older women should teach the younger women. And that would give you an opportunity just to share with them about how to go about preparing for a big occasion, or even, you know, a casual occasion, how you think through what you do, where you keep things, why you keep things in a cabinet like you do, and then what you're thinking about in your preparations for this event that's coming up. And then I used to be very, very guilty of always having everything so in hand that nobody could help me. And then all the time it was so much in hand, it's just that I want it done my way, I want it done when I want it done, you know, the whole thing, and it touched me not. And so I have discovered that people need to be needed, and if they offer to help, it's because they want to, or sometimes because they know they're supposed to. Good manners to do that. But I say now, accept that no matter what it is you have them do. And if you have come up, as I have in a couple of occasions lately, and have everything already ready by the time the guest gets there, but there's not one thing to do, that you invite them to come visit with you, while you just, you know, turn on the light here, you know, or cut these last two pieces of celery, you know, or you need to put this spoon, you know, beside this dish. And you can let them either do, put that spoon beside that dish, you know, it's something you could do. But if they just say able to do that, we all like to be involved in activity. But we all like to be needed, wanted.
I would suggest that you just ask them to help you because they may be in
experiences in hospitality were, what were some of the early the building bomb. Blocks that gave you some of the convictions you have now that stand out in your mind? Not from day one to now, but...
in this little bitty shotgun house I had, that's what it's called, you know, when the rooms just go straight through and there are no doors on them, you know? And I decided then what I wanted eventually. You know, this big house with this huge kitchen with all these things in there so that anybody could come in and cook anything he wanted. And I'd have people in, whether they're from foreign countries or whatever, and they could come in and make themselves at home and fix and do. Well, I decided that if I were ever going to have that in the future, I had to do it with what I had now. And so with the mismatched broken spring furniture, the ill-matched colors, everything, it was so drab and dreary, and I started putting my things in it, you know, and lightening it up some, you know. So I really felt good when I walked in, and I was real sad to leave it, you know, when I finally moved out. But I started, every time I opened my front door, I knew that this was part of the process to whatever that future might be. And so now that I have a real nice apartment that's arranged somewhat like a home, I mean, you know, apartments generally are big rooms that you have a kitchen and dining and living all together, same area. Mine's divided up into rooms with an entryway and this kind of stuff. And people come, you know, and they enjoy coming, apparently. They say they do. And they'll come back the second and the third time, so I take it for truth. And I enjoy it immensely. And I enjoy having people come, you know, like we've had more of the girls from K-State than any of the other campuses. But they come, you know, and we'd have a seminar or do something at our BSU, and they spend the night with us. We had a group down from Illinois not long ago, and, you know, and they'd come and stay, and I had the beds all prepared on the floor and on the divan and all this, you know, everywhere, and we know exactly what has to be done when, so I guess that's how. I think that's probably the very beginning. And then I started experimenting with things, picking up on things. When I was in somebody's home, what did I like? What hit me right? There's some things I like in other people's homes that I wouldn't want in mine. You know, so I don't know. Responding to that. Excellent. There is a section in your book. I mean, in your book, on the dorm, and I think it was probably about what page five at the bottom of the page there were some of the things. Now, some of the things on these other pages are adaptable to a dorm room, just because, like when we came into this room, when I came last night and saw this room, it was quite a bit like what a dorm room at OU would be like. Dirty, dingy, nothing was on the walls. They had taken everything out of here and they had the chairs in rows across here. Well, I wanted a circle. Well, you don't circle in this room with 45 chairs. And so I worked for, this is the fourth chair arrangement that I worked out. So we could have room for everybody and be more, what do you call, have more rapport with each other. And then God provided some pink and red construction paper. I went looking through the nursery departments and I found a couple of pictures. And I had brought the candles with me, visualizing a real nice, big, huge, open room with all these glass windows, and I put little candles along the windowsills, and, you know. And so I thought, well, this is good, because the scriptures admonish us to be content with what we have. You don't have everything to do with. You don't have all the money. You don't have all of the room. You don't have all of the furniture, the textures that you want. Be content with what you have, because you are a part of the creative being, then you have creativity and you can ask him for his. And so I asked him, what do I do with what I've got? You know, how do I set hospitality in a room? And that's why I did last night. I said, Lord help. You know, what do we do? Because here we are, we're talking about kind of an intangible thing of hospitality, what it is. And I mean, I wrote down some things that hospitality includes, you know, the qualities or whatever, but it's kind of nebulous. You either know when you've been received hospitably or when you haven't been. And I think when you start practicing in your dorm room and just asking God to permeate all the objects in there, and if he cannot permeate it, you know, then you know that you need to remove that and bring in something else. I asked some girls in the dorms, you know, what do you do? How do you do? What would you suggest to students? And one of the girls told me that her room, she's in a tiny little bitty corner room, but it was always neat and clean, she said, and the posters were different. They were not, you know, ultra religious as such, but they had a, what do you say, a sense of well-being or kindness or something about them. They weren't King Kong posters or, you know, something like that. And then she had plants in her room. And I said, I identify with the plants. I'm not a plant lover. I can kill them pretty quickly. But I never had plants before. And when I lived in this little tiny three-room house, duplex thing, this little old lady who lived across the driveway one day left on my kitchen table. And see, I never locked my doors because the latch didn't hit at the right place. And so I always left it open and unlocked. Even when I was gone for a weekend, my landlady said, don't do it. Well, I can't help it. But anyway, she just left on my kitchen table a little rectangle white plastic planter with hen and chickens in it. You know, that little cactus thing that multiplies real fast. And that was such a shock to me to see something else in there. And so I put it in my kitchen window. It would sit on a sill above the sink. And every day when I walked in my back door, and I was immediately just see that little plant, and I'd think, oh, something else lives here. Because, see, I live in that little place by myself, and it just did something. It was, you know, an enlivener. So
I think, too, in a dorm room, you know, it's so much. Hospitality is your attitude towards people.
It's not anywhere.
You know, it's not so much the little things that you have sitting around and stuff. And, boy, accepting, being accepting towards everyone that walks in those doors and loving them unconditionally and, you know, all those kind of things are really a part.
It's always the you attitude. Yeah. It's others. If you were to walk into this room with these girls, I mean, you were just now coming in, what would be your attitude? Where can I find a chair and get out of attention and the light, you know? Yeah. Or would it be, you know, oh, who's here? Wonder what I can do to, you know, help. It's, what is your attitude when somebody walks into your presence or when you walk into somebody else's presence? It's always the you attitude, helping somebody else be comfortable, somebody else to be served.
It's amazing, too, how quickly you'll feel comfortable when you're focusing on meeting other people's needs instead of worrying about yourself.
I think that's true, too. Mm-hmm.
My problem is that I'm not much of a cook. I've never learned to cook. And all this seems to be focusing around cooking for people. And I don't get much chance to cook. I want to learn, but I don't get much chance except when company comes over. And I hate to experiment on
people. I love it.
It's going to happen.
I love it. I always get a new recipe when company's coming.
Is there suggestions about learning to cook, or also what other things can we do when inviting people over besides have a meal?
That's a good deal, and I appreciate you bringing that up because one of the things that when I think about what I do and how I do it generally focuses around food, and God's been bringing that to my mind. I just lost 58 pounds, but I still focus on food, and so I just, you know, here I am about to. You know, the salad was great today, but that was my whole thing. I wanted the group to hurry and get there so I could get to that salad. Because I've been thinking about it all day. I knew those guys were fixing it. And so I would say there is a cookbook, which I don't yet have, but which I'm getting ready to purchase if God doesn't provide. I prayed for a Nave's topical Bible for over 2 years, and God never did give it to me. And so one day I went, how did I get it? And so I now have a Nave's topical Bible because I figured out he wanted me to buy it. And that's the way with this Joy of Cooking cookbook. If you don't know that book, it's about 2.5, 3 inches thick, and about, it's gigantic, but it has everything in it. It explains to you about the vegetables, how to cook them, how to prepare them with something else, what menus to use them with. I mean, everything that you need to know about the things you don't know about would just really be helpful. And I like to specialize in that kind of stuff, so that's what I'm going to do. You don't have much opportunity to cook or to learn those skills. And by the way, incidentally, that book even tells you how to boil water. And so I thought that was real kind of funny, but I should have had part of this brief this morning. There are other ways to entertain and stuff, and ask them to drop by. Or you go by, call somebody and say, would you come over and let's drink, hot water together.
Playing games together, there's all kinds of little things.
I love the game Boggle.
Yeah.
You know that old thing? Or the pit, or character clothing, or, those things. I keep collecting a stack of little games that are just kind of fun.
Or even going someplace together, you don't have to be in your home to be hospitable. It's your attitude towards them.
If you want several people, you could just do a thing like today, you have them make their own stuff. Send it out on pizza, have the crust made, or have a pancake mix made, and then they can add whatever they want to it.
We did that one night. We had popcorn and hot chocolate. And so when the guys went to get the cocoa, and somebody else brought something else, and then... and I had the popcorn and the popcorn popper, so, there we were set, but everybody contributed to it, but and most people have some way of popcorn, I think.
I was just going to say that I'm not a big cook either, and the thing that I enjoy most is having people come and make it. And they like it, especially in a college community where kids don't get to go and use an oven. I mean, an oven's a really fun thing.
I need it either way. I mean, they don't get to make cookies for months,
And especially foreign kids, too. Come in and make things they're familiar with. Mm-hmm. I knew that, but I always love it for me.
Right. We have about 2 minutes. Do you have another?
That's another idea. I have a friend who has parties quite often. And what she has people do is, the guys are supposed to bring the drinks, and coke and stuff, and the girls bring the potato chips and the potato chips.
And it's their party, too, that it's
One of the questions asked was, what do you do about smokers in your home if you don't smoke and stuff? And one of the gracious hospitable things is to have an ashtray available. And somebody wanted to know, what do you do when you always smell like smoke? Well, a friend told me the other day that cherry incense, you don't even have to burn it, but just let it hang in around your clothes and stuff, and it'll absorb the cigarette smoke. And somebody else said a bowl of vinegar exposed in the room would be the same thing. Excuse me, wait a minute. What? If you're allergic, I can't
share that.
Yeah, I think I would. And just tell them, I really apologize, but I just can't help it. I am allergic to that, and I will give you an ashtray, and you could sit down on the porch.
Why should you have to apologize for that?
Well, just because I don't... maybe saying I'm sorry is not a good expression, but say I regret that I am, allergic. And, just explain to him, well, good, I don't mind your disagreeing. But it's just kind of a kind way of coming in and letting them know. But if I just come out and say I'm allergic to that, well, then they're on the defensive. And then, see, my thought is to make them feel comfortable. And so I come in the back door by saying, I'm allergic. I regret that I'm allergic, whatever, but I just found out, 10 years ago that...
Would it be offensive to maybe have a little sign that says...
I mean, I have a daughter that has asthma.
Yeah. Well, when I go into my doctor's office, he says, you know, for our asthma and allergy patients, please no smoking. But in that seems right in a doctor's office, but for, you know.
Well, I think it depends on who it is, you know. If it's a non-Christian that doesn't have an idea that smoking, you know, that there's anything wrong with what he's doing, I think, you know, that can be a hindrance. And since our homes is where they're really exposed to the gospel of Christ, you know, we have an ashtray because I just really want non-Christians to be free to come into my home anytime and to be comfortable to the point that I will have the freedom someday to share with them what Jesus Christ means to me. And, you know, that's just a personal conviction. And I, you know, I know not everybody has that. But,
you have a question?
No. I was at a party at our principal's house at Christmas time, and, you know, he smokes and does everything. But they did have a sign right when he came to the door, no smoking, please, because it was going to be such a large group of people. And you know, a lot of the teachers and stuff smoke, and I don't think anyone felt offended. So if you were going to have a large group, I don't really, you know, people knew that he did those kind of things anyhow. But I didn't find it real. Well, I don't smoke or anything, but the other people didn't find it real offensive either.
Well, I can see in a big group like that and something you can do that with the kind of group that you were having, you can do that. So I think being adaptable, and that, you know, that's a real need for us as women, learning how to be flexible.
This is going to sound corny, but is it supposed to be a sin against smoking? Because our next door neighbor guy, we went over there just to meet him, and the first thing he said when he came in the door, I'm a Christian, you can't smoke in my house. I thought, well, what? You know, so what, is that supposed to mean anything?
Well,
I don't know what you're supposed to.
Sometimes people do that maybe because of immaturity or because they don't know any better. And sometimes just because they think it's, you know, supposed to be more identification as a Christian. They're really wanting that. It basically comes from insecurity, I think. And, you know, your response, you know, would always be, well, great, you know, I appreciate your being. Yeah. He probably, you know, came at you like he was attacking you. And, you know,
that's why it's me, because I can't stand cigarette smoke, but my husband smokes, and he just kind of, you know, his mouth fell open, and he just looked.
What he was doing was trying to communicate a message to you right off the bat, you know, and then it gave you an opportunity. I mean, you could see that as a need, as to where you could help him or a way to pray for him, you know, just in the area of tact.
Well, I sense, like, you know, someone made a comment once, the effect of something kind of, well, I don't even know how to really relay this to you, but something about a preacher smoking seemed really, really strange. Oh, that preacher smokes? Now, is there something that in the Bible that says you're not supposed to smoke?
There's nothing in the Bible about that, and I'd be glad to talk with you some more afterwards, you know, just to help clear up, you know, that particular area.